everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Tom, how are you today?
Fair to Midland.
I knew you were going to say that.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, fair to Midland. Well, you're looking good there, and it's good
to have. That could also be a direction or a location.
Of course it could. It could be a direction or a location, but I think your direction is pointing in the right direction.
I got my fingers crossed.
All right. I do too for you. It is Thursday, October the 21st, 2021. I can't believe we'll be wrapping up year 11 at the end of December and ready to launch into get ready for year 12, a dozen years here on the radio. And of course, the naming rights for our studio, Green Things in Zocalo Village. We love Green Things. The radio station is KVOI. Think of it like K-Voice, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We're at 10:30, and our worldwide live listening on the web is at buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. Our live line, when we do our phone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now Rex Scott. Rex Scott, Democrat, representing Pima County's District Number 1 Supervisorial District. He is the first Democrat to hold that seat, really, since 1972. Rex Scott, at the time, was the youngest elected council member, the at-large member, in the university town of Athens, Ohio. Rex Scott, good to have you back on the program.
Bill, great to be here with you and Tom. And Tom is making me harken back to my Southeast Ohio roots by using an expression like fair to Midland.
Yeah,
so
fair to
thank
Midland.
You, Tom.
That fair to Midland. At the time on the council, you were a Republican. What led you away from the GOP?
Well, there were a couple of factors. First of all, the Republican Party that I joined in the early 1980s really at the national level started to shift to the right in the 90s, especially.
You were a young Republican.
I was. Yeah. I was. I registered as a Republican when I turned 18 in 1981 and stayed a Republican until the year 2000. And the biggest factors for me were the rightward shift of the party. I was always a liberal to moderate Republican. And then I would also say that being a K-12 educator, there were not a significant number of members of the Republican Party, either at the national level or here in Arizona, who were supportive of K-12 education. And the ones that were continually getting knocked off in primaries, Bill. So I became an independent in 2000 and a Democrat in 2004.
Do you even recognize the Republican Party of Donald Trump?
I absolutely don't. But honestly, the Republican Party of Newt Gingrich was too conservative for me. And what I think is the most injurious part of the Trump presidency is that the party has really become wedded to one person, almost a cult of personality. I mean, for what I might say about President Bush and the second President Bush, I voted for the first one, the second President Bush and the Republican candidates for president, McCain, Romney, they were people who... You might question their positions on issues, but you didn't question their integrity or their commitment to American values and structures. And Trump, I think, has just completely upended that. And I don't understand why there are so many people in the Republican Party who know better, who are signing on with this guy. To me, they're either going along for the ride, which is shameless, or they are afraid of retribution. And he has shown his willingness to come after members of his party who are not sufficiently loyal to him.
Your return to politics came as the pandemic was really getting going and all unfortunately fired up. And so you've had an unusual kind of return to politics as we come to your 1-year anniversary of being elected in the first week of November of this year.
Very much so, Bill. We had collected all of our petition signatures by February of 2020, and we were just starting with our direct voter contact, doing door-to-door in some targeted precincts.
You'd already planned out where you were going to do the walking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we had already started in two key precincts and were just finishing up with them when everything shut down in the middle of March. And after that, the entire campaign was, for the most part, conducted virtually. All of our debates and forums were on virtual platforms. The voter contact that we were doing was either through no-contact literature drops, leaving campaign brochures on people's porches, or direct mail, digital media. And, for example, my general election opponent and I never met in person. Both of us won our primaries in August of 2020, and we were never in the same room together because of the constraints imposed on the general election campaign by the pandemic.
I was just trying to reflect on that. For our interview here on the show, I guess you both were doing it on the phone.
Yeah. I know I was.
Yeah.
I know I was, yes.
Yeah. Wow. So are we back to getting the supervisors together in the same room?
We're not, and that's unfortunate. I have voted each time it's come up to go back into public meetings. I think it's important. I think we have enough safeguards in place to protect staff and any audience members who want to come to a meeting. And that's why I've been consistently voting for us to go back into public meetings. But there have been objections and concerns that have been raised by some of my colleagues, and I will let them speak for themselves. But I think we have sufficient safeguards in place to protect the public and also to protect staff. And I think we should have gone back into public meetings some time ago.
Because one member of the board does not want to wear a mask.
That is one concern. Mm-hmm. That is one concern. And then other of my colleagues feel that if that particular member were to participate virtually, it would be difficult for the public and the other supervisors to track the meeting. If you might remember, there were two supervisors who participated virtually in the final months of the last board's tenure. And there are a lot of memories about the technological challenges that presented. The bottom line, Bill, is that we are not on the same page as a five-member board as to when we can go back into public meetings, and that's unfortunate. I hope we get to that consensus soon.
The governor has written a very strong letter to the city of Tucson saying the city is violating state law and the governor's executive order when it mandated that employees be vaccinated or lose their jobs. So far, he has not turned his attention to you and your colleagues on the Pima County Board of Supervisors or to Mr. Huckleberry, the county administrator. How is your situation in the county different than the city as you see it?
Well, what we have done was we were presented five options. On October 5th, we asked the county administrator to come back to us with a package of options for encouraging more of our employees to become vaccinated. And we were given five options, and we selected three of them. And the three that we selected, the first one says that any employee who works primarily or exclusively with vulnerable populations, populations who are very much at risk of being infected with the coronavirus, either because of their age or status in life, those employees have to be vaccinated by the first of the year, or they could face discipline up to and including termination. We think that is reasonable because people who are in vulnerable populations are defenseless, unprotected. Moreover, because of the statuses of some of those vulnerable populations, those employees could be more at risk of becoming infected themselves.
Health department workers, those working in the jail.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are two mm-hmm. of the categories. We're going to get a complete list mm-hmm. of categories to ratify at our November 2nd meeting. We also are moving forward with the positive incentives that we have in place.
Is there a money incentive?
There's $300 that you can get, and that's from federal pandemic relief funds that the county has gotten from the federal government.
That would be a check that the employee would see in addition to their regular pay.
Yes, and they also get 3 days of leave if they are vaccinated. There is also a surcharge of a little bit more than $45 every 2 weeks on a health insurance surcharge. The county is self-insured, and because of the costs that we've already incurred and because of the costs that we could incur if an employee were infected with COVID and God forbid, had to be hospitalized, we think that that surcharge is reasonable. It would be every 2 weeks. All new employees are required to be vaccinated. If you want to aspire to a promotion, you have to be vaccinated. That makes sense when well over 75% of employees are vaccinated. If you're aspiring to a leadership position, you ought to demonstrate your understanding of that as an organizational value. And then we're also prohibiting outside employment for any of our employees who are not vaccinated, because that helps to lessen the risk of community spread and also COVID coming into the county workforce because of people working outside their regular job. What we did not do is select the option that said that all of our employees, full-time, part-time, seasonal, had to be vaccinated. And we also did not tie pay raises or pay adjustments to vaccination status.
And that was what Dr. Hines was favoring, imposing a vaccine mandate for all employees.
That was what he said at our mm-hmm. last meeting, but he voted with myself and Supervisors Bronson and Grijalva to put in place the package that I just summarized for you.
All right, we will pause right here, Supervisor Rex Scott, because Rex Scott, you know what I want to talk about right now.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about bakery goods. I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. I was talking to a friend today that loves the Kringle, and they sell the individual pieces. You can, of course, buy the full Kringle, but those are available, the individual pieces, and you will not regret making that decision. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Rex Scott, what would you go for right now up at Mona's if you could, in the way of, would you go the route of a chocolate croissant? Just a plain butter croissant, a piece of their Danish coffee cake. What are you in the mood for right now?
Well, Bill, if it was up to me, it would be anything with cinnamon in it.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about cinnamon rolls for a while. Mona's...
That's just my weakness.
Oh, my goodness. Some beautiful cinnamon rolls. They have the roll itself that is more of a tightly rolled cinnamon roll. Then they have kind of the... I call it like a Frisbee. It's almost the size of a Frisbee. So, yeah, cinnamon rolls. I'm glad you brought that up, Supervisor Scott. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. We'll be right back on Buckmaster. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Thursday edition. I want to talk about our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. Teresa Cullen, who I think a lot of people are very happy with the way she has handled the Pima County Health Department. Dr. Cullen, Rex Scott is with me, Pima County Supervisor, District 1. I think you would give Dr. Cullen high marks, wouldn't you? Going back to your school educator, I don't know, what kind of grade would you give her?
I would give her an A++. Dr. Cullen's leadership of the health department during this extraordinarily challenging time has been top-notch, and she has put together a very effective and responsive team at the health department, and working in partnership with our chief medical officer, Dr. Francisco Garcia, the people of Pima County are really lucky to have both those leaders in place, especially right now.
Yeah, I look forward to our conversation. She's always very transparent, very articulate. And Tim Steller will be with me tomorrow, too, and we'll have to congratulate Tim because he was named Arizona Columnist of the Year.
Very impressive.
Very impressive credentials for Mr. Steller. All right, Rex Scott is with us, the supervisor for Pima County Supervisorial District Number 1. There are five members of the board of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Scott is a Democrat, the first Democrat elected to that district since 1972. The district, the DNA of the political DNA of the district is really changing, isn't it?
Very much so. It was, as you indicated, a Republican district since 1976, the Democrat who was elected in 72 lost his reelection bid. And from 76 until 2020, it was a Republican district. But we noticed as we were starting to think about running for this seat in 2020, that the district was really becoming more purple, not only in terms of the voter registration numbers, but also in terms of how different candidates performed. For example, in 2018, Governor Ducey and Attorney General Brnovich both won the district, but so did Senator Sinema, so did Secretary of State Hobbs, so did State Superintendent Hoffman. And there's also within the district a sizable block of independents, and they have shown a great willingness and ability to be ticket splitters. And so we really targeted independents and what you refer to as persuadable Republicans when we were doing our own outreach during the 2020 general election. And fortunately, it worked out for us, albeit by a very narrow margin.
And it wasn't a narrow margin on election night.
No, it wasn't.
It was 11,000 votes you were leading by.
On election night, the first group of ballots that are reported are the mail-in ballots. And the majority of voters in Arizona and Pima County vote by mail. And there was a big push by the Democratic Party, both locally and statewide, to get Democrats to vote by mail. And so, yes, I was leading by 11,000 votes when those ballots were announced. The next group of ballots that were announced were the people who voted in person on Election Day. And nationally, statewide, locally, the Republican Party was pushing their voters to vote on Election Day or turn in their mail-in ballots at the polls. Our lead was cut in half when those ballots were announced. Mm-hmm. And then in the 10 days after the election, you had late early ballots, provisional ballots, people who voted at early voting centers, all those came in. When all of the votes were counted, we beat our general election opponent by a mere 730 votes.
Boy, that lead diminished, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did.
Wow.
I tell people those 10 days of voting might have taken 10 years off my life.
Yeah. And your
10 days of counting, I should
say. The fingernails.
Man.
So the redistricting or setting new lines, if you will, the political boundaries, when does that happen? And what would you envision as far as District 1?
Every county in Arizona, and there are 15 counties, are required to redraw their supervisor district lines after each census. So the last time the district lines were drawn was 2011, in the wake of the 2010 census. That process would be close to completion were it not for the fact that the census, because of the pandemic and other factors, the census results came in late. So the legislature gave all 15 counties until the summer of 2022 to have their supervisor districts redrawn. Each one of us will appoint a member to a committee to look at those lines. We already know that my district and District 4 need to lose some voters, and districts 2, 3, and 5 need to add voters, because you're supposed to have reasonably even supervisorial districts in terms of
population.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I've only got a couple of minutes to go. In our last session with you, you were up in Prescott. You were doing it telephonically, and we talked about what I consider to be just the elephant in the room, the whole thing about the Regional Transportation Authority and its extension, which will be coming up. There's five more years, now less than five,
right,
on the current 20-year program. There's a very important meeting that we should point out that is coming up. We ought to preview that right now.
The Pima Association of Governments Regional Council and the Regional Transportation Authority Board will meet on Friday, October 29th, and we will be continuing our discussions about how to move forward so that the Citizens Advisory Committee can finish the work that they've been working on for 3 years. There's been some interruptions because of the pandemic on putting together an RTA Next plan for us to approve and send before the voters. Because you're absolutely right, Bill. If we don't have a plan approved by the voters ready to go when the current RTA expires in 2026, that is going to be nothing short of catastrophic for this region. There, the legislature gave the RTA permission a few years ago to either ask the voters to renew the existing half-cent sales tax or additional revenue up to a full cent. And no jurisdiction, not the county, not the city, not any of the other jurisdictions, can accomplish as much individually as what all of us can achieve together. And so I'm going to be working with my colleagues from the other jurisdictions to find a way to move forward and to look at some bases for compromise so that we can move forward in the best interest of this entire region.
To try to settle some of these grievances, in effect, that the city has with the plans.
I think there is plenty of opportunity for compromise and strong basis to find common ground. And all of us, including Mayor Romero, the city's representative, have indicated that we're committed to compromise. The mayor said at the last meeting that she has no desire to use her words, to blow up the RTA. And I take her and all of my colleagues at their word that they are committed to compromise so that we can move forward and get a new plan in front of the voters.
All right, Rex Scott, Pima County Supervisor, District 1, thank you very much. Good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Great to be here with you and Tom.
Always a pleasure. Will Humble is coming up next. Will is our contributor on public health, and he sure knows about public health. This man has incredible credentials in that area. We'll talk to Will for his monthly visit. Lots to discuss on the booster shot front, everything to do with COVID right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. And again, tomorrow, the Friday Focus interview will feature Dr. Teresa Cullen. She is the Pima County Health Director. Tim Steller, who was just named Arizona Columnist of the Year. He is from the Arizona Daily Star. Tim and I will be talking with Dr. Cullen. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I love Green Things. They are the place to go for everything green for your garden. And one of the things I love about Green Things is I'm not a horticultural expert, and I think probably most of our listeners aren't. Tom, join me here. But when you want to go and get some color in your garden, you're going to say to one of the Green Things people, I want some color in the garden, and I want something that can survive now the autumn, and possibly kind of maybe if we get a freeze, or maybe not a hard freeze, something that's going to make it.
It can happen.
Yeah.
January, February.
Sure. It could even happen in December, I guess. But anyway, now is a perfect time to go buy Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They're in their 51st year. They're open every day. Their website, greenthingsaz.com, also zocalovillage.com. That has all the information about on there for their Zocalo location, which is at Green Things over on East River Road. All that wonderful merchandise, much of it handcrafted from Mexico. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And let's go now on the live line to Phoenix. Will Humble is a longtime public health enthusiast. He is currently the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. His 40 years, that's four decades in public health, include more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various roles, including the director. He was the top guy from 2009 to 2015. We're also delighted Will is our latest contributor to the Buckmaster Show, regular contributor. He's one of two dozen regular contributors to this program. Will, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation. And by the way, you guys are really lucky to have Dr. Cullen as your health director down there in Pima County.
Yeah, I know.
She's
you're
dynamite.
You're really happy from what her performance and Dr. Garcia, also the team, they've done a great job down here, I think, and you've said that in the past. What are they doing right, Will, and maybe some other health officials could learn from?
Well, it's simple. They're using evidence to drive their decisions. And that's not happening in a lot of other counties. And it's certainly not happening in the governor's office and or in former Director Crist when she was in her role. So that's simple as that. You know, Dr. Cullen, Dr. Garcia, Mr. Huckleberry, the board, Mr. Scott, they, you know, you've got a cohort of people who believe in evidence and doing using evidence to drive your decision making, and you see it reflected in simple things like, you know, the way they really wanted to get those FEMA sites down into Pima County and some of those underserved areas to bring up the vaccination rates early in the year, even though Director Chris tried to stop them from doing that. I mean, it's just simple as that.
Well, let me talk a little bit about Attorney General Mark Brnovich and his stance, and the governor's stance is right in line with Brnovich on the whole thing about COVID shots and the masks. Has that response been, in your opinion, Will Humble, irresponsible and unprofessional, and possibly a situation that may have endangered people's lives?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the answer is yes to all three of those things. And we see it reflected in the actual data. We put out a report the Public Health Association did yesterday. I've got a blog post up about it right now, where we compared the top three, or the leading causes of death in Arizona. And it's always heart disease and cancer year in and year out in Arizona, as it is in every other state, just about. And this year, COVID-19 in Arizona, or during the pandemic, COVID-19 in Arizona was the leading cause of death, period. More than heart disease and more than cancer. And now that is not the case in other states. So in our report, we compare Arizona to Washington State and Colorado, states with similar numbers of people, about 7 million, western states with the big urban center and lots of rural places. To be sure, there's demographic differences in terms of age profile and stuff, but we did a comparison of those three states, and what you see is that in Colorado and in Washington, COVID-19 is a distant third, way behind heart disease and cancer, whereas in Arizona, COVID-19 is the leading cause of death. The difference, of course, being that the governors in Washington and Oregon did a good job using evidence to drive their decisions. They had universal masking requirements in public spaces. They did far more mitigation in bars, restaurants, and nightclubs, even suspending the operation of those during the winter surges. They have vaccine requirements in place for public employees. You go up and down the line, those states did things based on evidence, and you see it reflected in the much lower numbers of deaths. Arizona, we've had more than 20,000 deaths from COVID-19. Washington State and Colorado, both with similar 7.2 million people in those states, just like us, had less than 8,000. So we've got more than double the number of deaths from COVID-19, and it's directly attributable to the decisions that Governor Ducey and Director Crist made over the last 18 months.
Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich is vying for the GOP nomination for the U.S. Senate in next year's election. At a GOP event, the Attorney General questioned the need for anyone to get vaccinated because people who have gotten vaccine are getting infected by the Delta variant, he said. He then went on to say, what's the point of the vaccine? Is he pandering to the people that he needs to get elected?
Well, that was a shooting club, I think, that he was talking to, like a gun enthusiast type of club. So he's speaking to the crowd, you know, and you could hear that clip. I heard the clip myself, and there's the crowd goes wild when he says that kind of stuff. I mean, I think Attorney General Brnovich knows that was misinformation, that the vaccine, while there are breakthrough cases, is tremendously protective at preventing bad outcomes, hospitalizations, and deaths. He knows that, but he's also playing to the crowd. He knew he was in a crowd that, was going to love saying bad things about the vaccine, and he did. I think it was on social media. I forgot which journalist put it up, but it's not a surprise. It's what politicians do. I would like to see more of our candidates for public office focus on evidence and truth and not just, tailor their messages to whoever's in front of them. But sadly, that's not the case for most of them.
And we've reached the red COVID phase of the pandemic. What I mean is roughly 9 months into the presidency, red states and blue states have widely diverged on what should be the least will humble political of issues, vaccination rates for COVID-19. Health issues have been politicized in this thing like probably the last time it happened was the great flu pandemic of 1918.
Well, it has, absolutely. I mean, you look at it's totally politicized. And I'm just going to be honest with you. I think a lot of it goes back to the behavior of the former president and his attitude about masking and evidence and so forth. By the way, I will say President Trump did a terrific job with the vaccine. I mean, the decisions that they made in the previous administration are the reasons why we got three good vaccines this early. So kudos to the former president and his team for the vaccine part of it. But shame on him for ignoring the evidence that these other mitigation measures like masking are an important tool at slowing the spread. We did a survey that we released about 3 weeks ago And we were getting public opinions about mask requirements in classrooms and just general mask requirements. And we found this huge discrepancy between what registered Republicans and registered Democrats think. And 92% of registered Democrats in Arizona believed that schools should be able to require masks in their jurisdiction. In other words, that they should be able to make the decisions for themselves in that school district. And that was only 48% of Republicans felt the same way. So, you know, it has been politicized, and there's lots of reasons for it, but a lot of it goes, in my opinion, back to the former president.
All right. The FDA has broadened the use of COVID-19 boosters. We'll get an update from Will Humble about the very latest on that, like folks like myself who were in the Moderna program, took the two Moderna shots, and I'm wondering when I can go to my local pharmacy to get my booster. I'll ask Will that when we continue on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you to the point now you've got to get in the car or truck and go somewhere? Just get away. I think Silver City would be a perfect getaway this weekend. Only a three-hour drive from Tucson. We always say, you know, it's at least 10 degrees cooler. It's mid-70s right now, and I'm looking ahead to their forecast. Some of these days, upper 30s. Low 40s for the overnight. What a weekend they've got planned. 70 for the high, 44 for the low. I mean, perfect autumn weather over in Silver City. What do you do when you get there? There's just so much to do, including a beautiful visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument just north of Silver City. Start your planning now. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation with Will Humble, who is the Buckmaster Show contributor on public health. He's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health. U.S. health regulators, Will, have significantly widened the nation's COVID-19 booster campaign. The footprint has been widened considerably. I'm curious. I'm in the Moderna family. When can I get the booster?
Well, I have to ask you your age, Bill.
Let's put it this way, qualifying in the over 65 group.
Okay, then you can.
Okay.
So just this week, the FDA authorized a new vaccine for Moderna. It's not a new vaccine, but it's half of the dose of the regular Moderna vaccine. They made that authorization yesterday. The CDC is meeting today on that same question. I'm sure they're going to recommend it. So you can go down and make your appointment with whoever your primary care doc is. And now they may not have it in stock, so you'll have to check. But you could always visit a pharmacy next week or the week after. So a good idea would be for you, if you haven't gotten your flu shot yet, schedule your flu shot with your booster for Moderna.
And I have gotten the flu shot already. So, and even if you can get the flu, you can mix the flu shot with the COVID. There's no problem.
That's correct. That's been well established. Yeah.
So kids now, there's enough vaccine for the kids.
Well, the federal government has bought enough vaccine for the kids, and it's a Pfizer vaccine. So, it's a third of the dose of the adult, amount. It's a third of the dose that's in the adult vaccine for Pfizer. Federal government has purchased the vaccine from the company. It's in packages of 100 doses, so 10 vials of 10 doses each. Pediatricians can order a minimum of 3 boxes, so that's 300 shots. And those should be arriving if a pediatrician office pre-orders them now with, for example, the Pima County Health Department. They could begin vaccinating kids probably, I would say, November 7th, 8th, 9th, something in that range. We expect the FDA and CDC to have both authorized and recommended that pediatric vaccine by November 5th.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, I don't know if these are, we've talked in the past, Will Humble, about scare headlines. And the one that's really, really picking up a lot of steam are the new variant that has emerged out of England. And I guess this is something that's similar to Delta, but maybe a little more even transmittable. What are you worried about the new Delta descendant, which is rising in the UK?
Not yet. I haven't read enough about it for me to get concerned yet. So I'll take a look at that when we get off the show, or when I get a chance, maybe tomorrow. But there will continue to be new variants that come from different parts of the world, mostly developing nations. I'm kind of surprised that a new variant would come out of England. I would expect new variants to come out of somewhere like Papua New Guinea or Indonesia or somewhere in Africa where there's so many unvaccinated people still. But there will continue to be new variants that happen. This virus is going to continue to evolve. We just need to cross our fingers that we don't get a new variant that's even more transmissible than Delta. And for this new variant that you described in England, for it to take over, it's going to have to be even more transmissible than Delta. And because that's the way this whole thing works, it's survival of the fittest, really. And the fittest meaning the viruses that reproduce the easiest, which means the ones that are most transmissible. And that's why Delta completely displaced Alpha. And why Alpha, by the way, displaced the California variant, which is the version that we had through the fall of 2020.
All right, let's switch gears from COVID. Maricopa County became the first county in Arizona yesterday to move forward on accepting a settlement, I believe, on the opioid crisis, that huge settlement that's going on right now. It's not a lot of money, I understand. The pool is not a lot of money nationwide for this.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the key, well, there's several keys to this opioid situation. Number one is that we've got a decent law in place now. The Arizona Opioid Epidemic Act, which passed a few years ago, is doing a decent job at slowing down the number of persons that become addicted to opioids from prescribed drugs. That's oxycodone and others that are from prescriptions. But what is happening is that we're seeing more and more fentanyl that's arriving in Arizona and across the country. And it, and the problem with, one of the big problems with fentanyl is that it is so incredibly powerful and potent that it is incredibly easy to make a mistake with dosage, and the quality control with those street drugs of fentanyl is poor. And so we have all these deaths that are happening among young people who are not addicted to opioids necessarily, but are at a party and they take a pill. That pill ends up being fentanyl or cocaine that's laced with fentanyl. And we just continue to see skyrocketing deaths. And prescribed drugs are still a problem, but it's the street fentanyl that is really causing the catastrophic outcomes.
What is fentanyl?
It's a synthetic opioid drug that's really, really powerful. It's synthesized in the U.S., but also in other countries. It reacts in the brain the same way that things like oxycodone and heroin do. But the difference is it's incredibly powerful. So, heroin's much more powerful than morphine. This fentanyl is far more powerful and potent than heroin. And it's just that there's so little room for error when you have a drug that potent. And that's what's killing so many young people.
You know, my heart goes out to the folks that are in pain and they do need some kind of pain relief. Are those people being really hurt by these restrictions on opioids?
Yes. And the reason is because we do not have an adequate treatment network in Arizona. I'm glad you brought this up, because when the Opioid Epidemic Act happened in Arizona, it changed the prescribing practices. And so people had a harder time getting oxycodone and other medications that they had become addicted to as a result of, pain after surgery or a hurt back or something like that. And so what had to happen if we were going to do this responsibly was to, at the same time that we cut back on the prescribing practices, that we increase the network for treatment. Mm-hmm. Like methadone clinics and so forth. And we haven't done that. And so there's just not enough pain management docs. There are not enough methadone clinics. And by the way, there's a huge not in my backyard problem with methadone clinics, where we have this huge demand for methadone clinics where people can go to get methadone to help them to wean themselves off of their opioid disorder, but there's not enough places to do it. And when a facility says we would like to open up an opioid treatment clinic with methadone, and then the neighbors all get up in arms and say, "Not here, not here." And so, there's just not enough of a network.
Okay.
To get people treatment.
All right, very good stuff. Good point, Will Humble. Thank you, Will. We'll talk to you next month. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
All right, Will Humble, the Buckmaster Show health contributor on public health contributor. And I do it on behalf of my buddy Tom Fairbanks, Bill Buckmaster, saying Dave Ramsey is next. Have yourself a great afternoon.